This podcast was recorded Thursday, April 3rd at 10:38 a.m. Things may have changed by the time you hear this. Yeah, like reporters will stop asking President Trump if he will seek a third term. He cannot. The Constitution prohibits it. Any talk about this far-fetched hypothetical distracts from more important issues. Okay, that's my rant for the day. Let's talk politics. This is Snollygoster, WOSU Public Media's weekly look at Ohio politics and all those Snollygosters, those shrewd politicians who expertly use media catnip to distract reporters from covering things like, I don't know, national security officials texting attack plans. I'm Mike Thompson. Coming up on the podcast, your chance to support us and stand with the facts. But first, Sherrod Brown has been busy since leaving Washington in January. He and his wife bought a house in Bexley, which is in suburban Columbus. They say they want to be closer to grandchildren in Central Ohio and Connie Schultz's job at Denison University. And last week, Sherrod Brown announced the formation of the Dignity of Work Institute. The goal, he says, is to help Democrats and Republicans better understand the lives of American workers. It'll do polling, it'll conduct interviews, it'll do other research, and it will issue the occasional report. It also, let's be frank, keeps Sherrod Brown in the media as he considers whether to run for office again. To discuss this, we turn to a panel of experts, reporters Laura Bischoff of the USA Today Ohio Network and Sarah Donaldson of Ohio Public Radio, as well as Republican strategist Terry Casey and progressive activist Morgan Harper. Morgan Harper, he says this is for both parties, but he also says that Democrats have to do a lot of work to get working voters back. What do you think of this effort?
Well, I think it's great that Sherrod Brown is staying involved. He obviously has a lot of experience and was one of the top Democrats in Ohio elected for some time. But, you know, I will say it's interesting to focus on policy because I think for the party, I'm not so sure we have a policy problem. I do think we have more of a political problem, both statewide and nationally, and being willing to embrace an agenda that is going to meaningfully change people's economic lives, take on some of the concentration of power in the economy, and also recognize the real anti-establishment strain that has taken over a lot of different parts of this country, and especially Ohio, that people are very distrustful of traditional politicians. So hopefully that'll be integrated into the strategy as well.
That was our question, Laura. What do we expect this I don't think of an institute, and I don't think of working people, but I think of institutes right away. I think of, you know, tweed jackets, high back, leather chairs. But what do we expect this institute to find? I mean, that workers are overpaid or that unions overreach sometimes?
Well, I mean, I think that, well, first off, it's a nonprofit think tank, so it can't really embrace politics. However, it is aligned closely with, you know, Sherrod's longtime issue of what workers need. And I do think that it'll focus on, you know, overtime for employees, maybe increasing the minimum wage. Those are sort of the bread and butter. Maybe some other, like, trade policies and things like that that impact workers across the board. We'll see.
It's based here in Columbus, Sarah?
It is based here in Columbus, and it's kind of like reading tea leaves in this election, of course, but I'm going to pull the quote that you mentioned. He's talking about American workers. He's not making note of Ohioans. He is still, it seems, focusing on a federal landscape. So if you're looking to what he might be running for in 2026, my bet would be closer to Senate right now.
So what's the Republican perspective on this, Terry? What is the real purpose of this institute in your mind?
It's called politics. Sherrod Brown's been at it since the 1970s in politics, and I haven't heard him say how many Republicans he's going to hire, and he's already done some polling. Was that a Republican firm that he hired? I mean, everyone knows this is about politics and Sherrod keeping his options open. I think it is genuinely up in the air whether he's looking at Senate or governor, or maybe he just decides to move on. But he doesn't have to make that decision now. But clearly, I hope he's for full disclosure and transparency. Let's see where all the money comes from. Is there any dark money involved? Who's hired? How much is spent? What's it used for?
There's a lot of talk, Morgan, that the older generation, of which Sherrod Brown is a part, he's 72 years old, should move on, should allow for a younger generation, folks like yourself, to enter into leadership roles in the party. Is it time for Sherrod Brown to push the policy but let somebody else carry the flag?
I certainly don't speak for what Sherrod Brown wants to do in his plans, but in terms of the voters and people, where I think a lot of our focus needs to be in terms of developing strategy, that polling has been done, that people are really frustrated with traditional Democratic Party. I mean, I think the latest stat was we're at under 30% approval rating. And it does seem like we're living in times without a very significant shift. We are not necessarily going to be able to persuade people.
And Sherrod tried to make it the last campaign, spend over $100 million trying to promote that he's all about the dignity of work. Well, that brand didn't sell well then. What's he got new or different for the future?
The difference is that he only lost by 3 or 4 points in a year that Trump won by 11 or 12. So he did make some, he actually ran a good campaign given the headwinds he faced, Laura. And who else the Democrats have right now?
Right. So I think that, he lost by less than he could have.
Yeah.
And depending on how the midterm headwinds are, he could make a run and maybe knock off John Husted for Senate or run for governor. I know a lot of his supporters are working for Amy Acton right now, but I could see, he could just jump right in if he wanted to.
The Amy Acton campaign for governor came out this week, say they expect to raise $600,000 in the first quarter. They say that's more than Sherrod Brown raised in 2009, not Sherrod Brown, Ted Strickland raised in 2009. Of course, Ted Strickland ended up losing in 2009, 2010.
Amy Acton's got the name ID. I mean, as we've talked about before, Democrats in this state don't necessarily even have a front bench. So, I mean, Amy Acton does have the name ID that a lot of other folks who have been floated for potentially running for governor as a Democrat maybe don't have. So I'm sure that's some of it. But of course, Vivek Ramaswamy is raising a lot of money as well.
When does Sherrod Brown, Morgan, does he have to make a decision on whether he's going to run at all, whether he's going to run for governor or U.S. Senate, maybe Secretary of State, go back to his roots?
Yeah, retrospect. I don't know. I mean, I agree that he has some time, and especially for the governor's race. I think if there was going to be a new entry for a Democratic candidate other than Amy Acton, that would probably be something useful for her to know sooner rather than later. But look, again, I mean, I think more important than anything else beyond specific races or specific candidates is that we as a Democratic Party need to be listening to the information we've gotten over the last few election cycles and developing a strategy that is going to meet people where they're at. And the people of Ohio have been hungry for a change for some time. They want outsiders. They don't like traditional politicians. And they want to see their economic prospects improve. And that's where we need to be focused.
As a little factoid, it's still more than 13 months to the May of 26 primary. Lots of time, but I think some people are going to look more carefully at things. Where are we at this fall? But it's a long ways off, and a lot of people are not paying attention right now.
Yeah, but the candidates who don't have the name ID of Amy Acton or Sherrod Brown, they want to get going now. Right, Laura?
Yeah, and I think the longer that Sherrod Brown is indecisive about his next move, it delays other Democrats jumping in. I think that they want coattails.
But for statewide races, it is very expensive. And I do agree that there's a limited number of people so far that we know in the Democratic orbit who can raise the type of resources to be able to mount a very credible statewide campaign. Vivek Ramaswamy is in a position because he has independent wealth in addition to Trump's backing that unlocks all sorts of new resources. And we haven't necessarily had that comparable resource on the Democratic side. So I do think we have limited options.
Coming up after the break, our conversation moves to the real purpose of a college education.
This is Tanya Mosley, co-host of Fresh Air. You'll see your favorite actors, directors, and comedians on late-night TV shows or YouTube. But what you get with Fresh Air is a deep dive. Spend some quality time with people like Billie Eilish, Questlove, Ariana Grande, Stephen Colbert, and so many more. We ask questions you won't hear asked anywhere else. Listen to the Fresh Air podcast from NPR and WHYY.
It is a question perhaps as old as higher learning itself. Is going to college simply to learn specific skills to get a good job, or is it to gain wide and deep knowledge to live a better life in general? Governor DeWine wants to put more emphasis on getting a job. He proposes adding job placement to the list of things that determine how much state money public colleges and universities get. Now the formula is based on course completion, degrees, and certificates, but not job placement. Critics say the rule would diminish the value of liberal arts degrees and pit community colleges against universities in the fight for state funding. Sarah Donaldson, why does the governor want job placement to be added to that list of criteria?
I think it's really in line with a drum he's been beating for a while, which is Ohio needs this workforce to fill these jobs at places like Intel and Anduril and all these projects across the state that Jobs Ohio is prioritizing. But you do hear that concern from colleges that, A, how is this going to be determined? Is it a situation, what qualifies as gainful employment? Is it graduating and getting a job at a restaurant serving tables? It's a job, but it's not a job in your chosen field. So I think there's still a lot of questions about what this process looks like. And DeWine hasn't really elaborated on what that looks like, but he says he doesn't feel it'll affect non-STEM majors.
So what happens, Terry, if a history major or a philosophy major goes to Intel and gets a job there working in the processing plant? Does that count for the college?
Well, on your original question, the answer is yes and yes. We need both smart students as well as people that have skills. And I think the important thing to keep in perspective, out of the $2.1 billion Ohio's going to put into higher ed, this would only involve $100 million, 5%. So I think as long as you keep the balance, because the governor Wednesday, when we spoke to the Metropolitan Club, made the point he likes English majors because they tend to be smart and can communicate. So there's different ways how the details of it are written, but again, it's only a 5% factor, and we need to keep the balance. And the good thing is, under Kasich as governor, they started moving, instead of just the number of bodies in a chair in a university, what's their progress towards a degree. So I think Ohio's already made some progress. This is another step on it, and if it's 5%, I don't think that's too risky. You can still keep the balance of having smart people who can have jobs.
Morgan, is it a bad idea to have some accountability at universities that what they're teaching students results in them getting a job and making a good living?
I don't think it's a crazy idea at all to have some kind of standard around or at least be tracking what the job prospects are for people who are moving through Ohio's higher education institutions. But what I would say is it's very difficult to take Mike DeWine's efforts on this front seriously when we have heard him say virtually nothing about the cuts that are happening, federal funding on research. Who do we think is also impacted by these research cuts? Students that are being trained by scientists that are not going to have funding necessarily to run their labs in the same way. Is there any more straightforward job training than science that then you do research and you go on to work and develop drugs? I think so. That could impact people's health. So, yeah, is it good to have some accountability? Sure. Do I think that Mike DeWine is most concerned with creating the best world-class higher education environment for Ohio students? I do not.
Laura, do we know how well colleges are doing with job placement right now? They have stats for certain majors and things like that, but is it a glaring problem? It's a demographic problem right now. There are just fewer young people than there used to be.
Yeah, I don't have the data on that, but I will stick up for a liberal arts education, because oftentimes it's not a real obvious path when you're an English major that you're going to then go become a writer or work, in English lit or something like that. But it teaches the critical thinking skills that are essential for a lot of different careers. And I think more important than what kind of liberal arts degree you have is whether or not you are working toward getting internships and work experience that then and helps like lay down a career path for you.
Terry, I went to Ohio State. You went to Ohio State.
Yes.
Do you know what Ohio State's motto is?
I kind of forget. There's the alma mater song with all the time and change will surely go and all
that.
I
didn't know that. But I'm going to do the Latin first, so Latin teachers, please forgive me. Disciplina en civitatem, or education for citizenship. So that's what you're saying, Laura. That's the motto of Ohio State University. It's not. So what is Latin for education to get a job? I don't know what that would be. So that's what Mike DeWine is saying, though.
Well, but again, the balance, it's striking the right balance. And the governor was very strong Wednesday in saying he likes smart people because smart people tend to adapt. And let me also quote, there's a guy named Bob Dylan that wrote, "The times are a-changin'." And I think that applies to higher ed in many different ways. we got a different world ahead of us than what we had 10 or 20 or 30 years ago.
Well, and I think to that point, Terry, we're going to need people that can think through complex problems. There is a potential for a slippery slope here, like Laura is getting at, of completely devaluing or allowing resources towards liberal arts education. And you see even guys like the founder of Planeteer, you know, huge technology company that is talking about lamenting the decline of the U.S. because of a lack of an understanding of history. That's not necessarily going to happen just through keeping a focus solely on what is the A to B job situation, but we need to make sure we have critical thinkers going to help us navigate this very complex terrain.
That was progressive activist Morgan Harper. My thanks to her, as well as Republican strategist Terry Casey and reporters Sarah Donaldson of Ohio Public Radio and Laura Bischoff of the USA Today Ohio Network. All right, time now for our Snollygoster of the Week segment, where we honor the shrewdest politician or political move of the past week. You know, the state budget is a big deal. It's pretty boring to talk about, but the state collects and spends about $100 billion a year. $100 billion, that's with a B, billion dollars. Every 2 years, the governor and lawmakers look at every spending and revenue line in that budget, and they approve it. In theory, the budget is supposed to only about collecting and spending money, but it isn't. It never is. Take, for example, this year. Lawmakers are trying to change the way Ohio kills condemned inmates. They are trying to mandate that Ohio only recognize two genders. And they're trying to tell public libraries on which shelves they can put books that deal with sexuality and LGBT issues. What do those social issues have to do with the budget? Well, that's for lawmakers to answer. But it's a pretty shrewd move. And for that, they get our Snollygosters of the Week award. Let me end on this note. We are public media. We rely on listener donations for the bulk of our funding. And our radio station this week is in the midst of membership week, fund drive week. We won't take up much of your time here on the podcast, but we'd like to ask our Snollygoster fans to help us remain strong. Help us keep bringing you the facts with, a dash of snark, but still the facts. Please consider giving at WOSU.org. And if you give at $10 a month, we will send you an NPR Stand With The Facts t-shirt. What better way to show your support for the work we do and your support for, the facts? Give at WOSU.org. And do me a favor, please mention Snollygoster in the comments so we know you are a listener of the podcast. Thank you. That'll do it for this week's edition of Snollygoster, which is part of the NPR network. For our student producer, Katie Genius, our digital producer, Michael DeBonis, and our audio engineer, Dalton Jones, I'm Mike Thompson for Snollygoster from WOSU Public Media.